The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger as we bring you the 2009 NFL and college football season in style. We've got you covered with game insight, opinion, and football expertise. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter.
There is no bigger honor than to go into the professional Hall of Fame or college Hall of Fame.
Each week, the Big E Sports Show will take you under the helmet to bring you the latest talk on the 2009 season of college and pro football.
Is there maximum effort out there? Because that's one thing you don't have to be talented at. You don't need talent to try hard. And that's the thing that I'm looking for out of them this year.
Under the Helmet with Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back to another weekend edition of the Big E Sports Show as we get set to go under the helmet with our three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska, Jason Peter. How are things out there in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Things are great. It's warming up. It's golf season out here. The snow is all melted. I'm actually looking to head over to the course when I'm finished here.
It's outstanding. I know you like to tee it up, but also spring practice is going to be starting pretty soon for you guys, right?
Yes, it started this past week, but it really doesn't start until next week. Spring practice doesn't start until you put the pads on and you start going out there and you start banging around. And, you know, the big thing this year at Nebraska is no green jerseys for the quarterbacks. There's one exception, a kid by the name of Cody Spano, who was coming off an ACL injury 2 years ago. He was back out on the field, I think, 4 months later in spring football, running an option. Sure enough, blows the same knee again. So everybody except for him will be completely live, and that's the thing that I think you have to do with all players, no matter what school you're at, no matter what position you're at, because that's how you find out what a guy's made of. I mean, how do you know how a quarterback's going to respond to a 6'5", 265-pound defensive end that runs 4-5 and is coming around the corner and ear holes you? How do you know how that quarterback's going to respond unless it actually happens?
Well, what is the pulse in terms of there in Lincoln, Nebraska, the anticipation? I know Bo Pelini obviously having a terrific finish last year in 2009. What are people thinking as 2010 approaches the season?
People are expecting more. People think that the defense could be better. Depending on the quarterback situation, if the younger kid Cody Green from Denton, Texas, if he ends up getting the nod, and he started one game last year against Baylor, and it was nothing great, but it was also nothing horrible. But then you have obviously Zach Lee, who's the returning quarterback, who if most people could have had their wish granted, he would have been removed from the team by the end of last year, except he then went out and he played well against Arizona in the Holiday Bowl. So I don't know if he's turned the corner. I don't know if it's just, if you could get a month to game plan for every single game, he would be all right. Unfortunately, that doesn't get to happen. I mean, you got to be ready to go in 7 days. It'll be interesting. It'll be very, very interesting because they're two different styles of quarterback. Zach Lee is a guy who everybody thought could run, but he really can't run. And you can tell when he is forced to run that he's almost in the field position when a defender gets within 3 or 4 yards of him. Now, Cody Green, the big kid from Texas, I mean, this kid, the first time I met him, I said that he must play defensive end. I mean, he's about 6'5", 6'6", 250 pounds, and he's thick. Now, he's athletic, and he can run, and he's got a cannon for an arm. So, but, you know, you got to factor in that the experience isn't there. And I don't care who you are, unless you have a team that's built completely solid all the way around that quarterback position, you'll have times where you struggle throughout the year with a new quarterback.
Jason Peter along with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show with our usual Under the Helmet segment. Of course, you're talking about Cody Green, Zach Lean, talking about the quarterback position, the offense. What about defensively? You guys got some big holes to fill this year, don't you?
Yeah, obviously the big loss is the nose guard and Dominican Sue. It's always difficult to replace guys like that. But I remember when it was 1997 and both Grant Wistrom and I left, and you're talking about two guys who get drafted in the first 15 picks. And I believe the next year, statistically, I think they were actually better. So you never know. I mean, one guy doesn't make the entire team or the entire unit. And, that's part of the process of being a good coaching staff is you're constantly developing players. You're constantly having guys behind starters just chomping at the bit, wanting to be a starter, wanting to take playing time away from the starter. That's the way that I felt. And I think once they're at a point, at least mentality-wise, attitude-wise, for the starters, when they go out there every day at practice, and they say to themselves, I've got to do everything I can today, even though it's Tuesday and we're still 4 days away from game day, I've got to go out and I've got to play this practice like a game. Why? Because the guy behind me, who's younger than me, who is just as hungry as me, maybe he's even hungrier because he's the one who's not running out there as a starter on game day, but he's faster, he's more athletic. You know, he's everything that a coach wants. He wants my job. So not for one day, and I can speak for Grant, and I can speak for anybody that played on those teams back in the championship years, that there wasn't a day where you felt like you didn't have to go out and earn your job. Every day I went out and felt I've got to make sure this is still my starting job. And, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was on an all-conference team as a sophomore. I was a first-team all-conference as a junior, a first-team as a senior, all-American. Not for one day did I ever go out there and say, I don't have to really prove it. I mean, my background speaks for itself. I'll still be the starter on Saturday. That was not the attitude, the mentality. So in terms of this year's defense, I think you're going to have guys that have been chomping at the bit that want to get out there, and you lose some game experience, but you've got to grow up fast when you're young. And these days, I think sometimes these kids are almost forced to grow up a lot faster than when I played. It was almost a requirement that when you came in, Coach Osborne, he was going to redshirt you. And most freshmen came in and redshirted and got comfortable that first year. Now these kids, they're coming in and they're telling the coach, I want to play. I want to play my freshman year. And if I don't play my freshman year, or if you can't tell me right now in my living room in front of my parents that I'm not going to play as a freshman, then I'm not going to come to your school. And it's a different type of game in that mentality. The kids are dictating a lot of what's going on in college football, but they're forced to grow up, I think, a little bit faster than 12, 15 years ago.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because did you always have that mentality, that mindset prior to coming to the University of Nebraska? I mean, I know you and Grant, you're kind of a rare breed, but did Tom Osborne, did Coach Osborne, did he instill that into you guys? Because it seems like not everybody thinks the way that you guys did.
I think I had it to some degree. I think coming from my family and my father, who is an immigrant from Germany who came over. I mean, literally one of those stories when he arrived in America with $1.75 in his pocket, and it was all change. I mean, he was out of his house back in Germany when he was 11 or 12 years old, doing apprenticeships and working for room and board and learning a trade. And it was a completely different way of life back then. And hard work is the only way that he was able to get where he was. And eventually that's owning one of the best restaurants in New Jersey. And to think about, you know, the immigrant who 25 years old who came over with nothing in his pocket. I mean, that just doesn't happen by chance. I mean, that's hard work, and that was the thing that he always instilled in us. And you know, even if we decided, say, I wanted to play basketball for a year when I was a kid, and after the first or second game, let's say I didn't really enjoy it the same way I did soccer or ice hockey, there was no option of just saying, well, I'm not going to finish out the year. You're going to finish out the year, and you're going to give everything you got, and then at the end of the year, if you don't want to go back and play next year, then that's fine. But if you're in it now, you're going to give everything you got. So there was a structure. There was a certain way of doing things growing up in my household, but I think it also was taken to a different level when I got here to Nebraska. And it was more, I mean, you mentioned Coach Osborne and the coaches. They added to it. But to have those championship teams that we did, there was a certain group of players. And that's usually what happens, I think, especially when you talk about just in my case, I mean, three national championships in 4 years, there was four or five or six players that were there before I got there. I mean, John Perella, you know, some guys were there when I got Trev Alberts and Kevin Raymakers and Terry Keneally, and a lot of people probably don't know these names, but they were more than just players. They were guys that went in and refused to accept anything less than maximum effort. They refused to accept anything less than complete dedication, complete effort, and they held everybody accountable. And, you know, the first year in 1993, that was my first year there, we end up losing to Florida State in the Orange Bowl, 18-16. And you know, even to this day, I was a red shirt, but, I mean, it I think probably was the best thing that ever happened because we had gotten a taste. And for so long, Nebraska had this kind of this stigma that, well, we can dominate the teams out in the Midwest, but when we have to go play a bowl game against the Florida team, there's too much speed. Well, little did anybody know, but Coach Osborne had went out and he had found some speed. He had got the nucleus of the offensive guys, the offensive linemen, some of the wing backs from Nebraska, but then he started to go to New Jersey and grab defensive tackles, and he started to go down to Florida and grab a quarterback or a cornerback and this and that. But he found guys with a certain attitude, a certain mentality. And truly, I can honestly say, by the time that we won our first national championship, at least when I was there in 1994, the team almost ran itself. We didn't want things to get back to the coaching staff. If you messed up, you were going to have to deal with some of the seniors, some of the leaders. And trust me, that was going to be worse than anything that Coach Osborne could hand out. So I think that's going to be the thing that if you want to be a championship team, it's more than just the coach. I mean, they do play a big part. They're setting the game plan. But in terms of making that engine run at top speed, I think the players are the ones that have to make sure everything's running in tune.
We're going one-on-one with our hero of the underground. That is Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. You can check out all of his information at jasonpeter.com. And while you're out surfing the web, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. You can email us at info@eradiosports.com. Since we are talking about Nebraska, hey, we also got to talk about Oklahoma because two of the best defensive tackles, Gerald McCoy and Sa of Nebraska, they are widely speculated that they're going to be the best players in this year's draft. My question to you, JP, is Sam Bradford, is he going to be the number one overall pick?
That's what I'm taking. If I got those three to pick from, I'm taking Bradford. You know, with the defensive tackles, it's a different game. It really is when you talk about college football compared to the NFL and even college football compared to when I played college football 12, 15 years ago, whatever it is. You know, lots of times I think when you look at college football these days, it's everyone's running the spread offense and everything's very, very passive. And certainly the NFL team, NFL league is a league where you have to throw the ball in order to be success, but you also have to run the ball in order to throw the ball. And that's something that these kids really don't see at defensive tackle position now, presently in college football. You don't have to ever really buckle down and play a Oklahoma team or a Colorado team that's going to try to pound the ball down your throat 40 or 50 times a game. Now we're either rushing the pass or there's some type of delayed draw or we're doing some type of toss, but it's become very, very soft. And that's why, for me, I love watching Nick Saban and Alabama play, because they're old school. They're smash mouth. They're going to take the ball and they're going to pound it down their throat. And they'll throw the ball when they need to, but it's very old school. It's very 1990s New York Giants type football player with O.J. Anderson and Maurice Carthon and those guys in the backfield. But that's kind of the thing. That was the style of football that we had to play against. And these kids, both McCoy and Sue, you know, I really don't know how well they'll transition. I think they'll both be good football players. I almost feel bad for them because they've been built up now to a point where how do they ever live up to these expectations? I mean, it's very similar as to some of the kids that come out of high school into college. I mean, some of them are already built up as the next greatest linebacker or quarterback that's ever played the game. How do you live up to those expectations? I mean, with either one, I mean, flip the coin, whether you're talking about Sue or McCoy, I mean, but the expectations for these kids are ready. I mean, I would hate to be in that situation, and I was in it somewhat, and being the 14th pick, I remember you're looked at almost as a savior of a team. Well, when you're talking about the number one or number two, boy, and I'll tell you, it's hard to have an impact if you're playing defensive tackle or nose guard your first year in the NFL. It will be very, very difficult because you're not playing against kids anymore. You're playing against grown men that are playing to provide for their families. And, you know, talking about grown men who it doesn't matter how much weight they can lift in the weight room. Anybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. There's something about the strength that your father could hold you with when you were younger compared to, you know, the strongest kid in your class. I mean, there's just something like that old man strength, and that's what they have. And when you talk about Sue and McCoy, these are both two kids that played in the Big 12, and as far as I'm concerned, the Big 12 didn't have any good offensive linemen. There were no superstars. There were no studs. Now, you talk about the Oklahoma team 2 years ago. Now you're talking about a legit offensive lineman. That's the one thing that concerns me, all right, with Sue, is that it's almost like all the stars aligned this year. There was no real big challenge. When you look at that game against Oklahoma 2 years ago down in he didn't sniff a play. I mean, he didn't get close to Bradford. I don't know how many.
I'm glad you're bringing that up. I'm not, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it hurts, obviously. But, you know, if it was a Colorado team, then it would really bother me. But there's always that mutual respect between us Sooners and Huskers. It's the truth. I mean, there was no real great challenge. The one challenge I think that both of them probably had this year was maybe the kid from Texas Tech, Brandon Carter, the face painter. He may have been the best offensive lineman that they played against as a guard. There were some decent tackles, but you're talking about defensive tackles and nose guards. How many times are they getting lined up one-on-one against those guys? I mean, I remember my senior year, you know, going out and playing Washington, and at center you have Olin Krutz, who's a 10 or 11-year vet, a first or second rounder. Next to him, you had a guy by the name of Benji Olsen, who was a first-team All-American, a first-round draft pick. I mean, Colorado, there was, you know, Chris Naoli, a two-time first-team All-American. I mean, those were the games where you found out what you were truly made of. And if you could dominate guys like that, then I think you can project a little bit better. But for these two guys, that is the one thing that concerns me. And look, they play two different styles of football. I mean, McCoy plays more of the way that I played, and the defenses at Nebraska during the 90s were kind of in that sprinter stance almost, feet are staggered, and we're just hitting that gap. And you're certainly playing some base defense, but it's more attacking. What Bo Pelini has these guys doing is more of a read and react. And, you know, that's a difficult thing to do in the NFL because, you know, you got a couple 350-pounders that are pushing on you. It's difficult to just stand there and try to keep guys off of linebackers. And I know that the defenses have changed. The old 3-4s, the old 50 defenses aren't the ones that they're running now. But to answer your question, if I had to pick either one of those, I'm picking Bradford instead.
Well, we talk about, of course, and highlight the defensive tackles with Sue and McCoy, but let's also dissect a little bit more.
You talk about that your pick would be Sam Bradford as the number one guy. How much pressure is on him to win his pro day, you know, I guess, and win over the Rams, because he's going to show off his surgically repaired throwing shoulder March 29th?
That might be, one of the most highly attended pro days. You know, I think the standard here at Nebraska was the pro day that Grant and I had. I think there was about out of the 30 teams or 32 teams, whatever it was at the time, I think there was probably 27 of them that had their full coaching staffs, head coaches, player personnel. And I imagine it's going to be probably pretty similar. Everyone's going to be curious to see how Sam Bradford can throw the ball. And I think as long as he can go out there and perform and show no ill effects of having that surgically repaired shoulder, I think he's in the driver's seat to be the number one pick. I just think with St. Louis picking, I think they passed on a quarterback last year. I think what they have now in Mark Bulger, it's time, I think, for a change. And Sam Bradford, I mean, is he going to come in? Is he going to tear up the NFL? No, I think he's a guy that you let sit on the sideline for a year, 2 years, let him build up that body. He's still a skinny little kid. I mean, he is. And you saw the difference this year, too, the difference between playing behind that offensive line of 2 years ago, where I think three of those guys ended up starting on Sundays this past year, compared to playing behind an offensive line where your starting center was supposed to be your starting tight end at the beginning of the year. And it was a mix-and-match offensive line, and ultimately he ended up getting dinged up, and I think that might be a concern of some of these NFL teams. Is he a fragile guy? Is he an injury-prone guy? And I think that's why you got to get him really just dedicated in the weight room and let him study, let him watch. I mean, Bulger, he's a veteran guy. I mean, this is a guy who took a job over from Trent Green, who I think Dick Vermeil had brought in specifically to run that offense. And obviously Kurt Warner was there, but there was...
he replaced Kurt Warner.
Yeah, there were years when Mark Bulger was one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's a good guy to learn from. He's been in the league. He's a veteran. He's had a success. So there's no rush to put Sam Bradford on the field, but he's got to go out and he's got to have an excellent pro day, because the thing about it is, especially for quarterbacks, they want to see these quarterbacks hit every target they can. Why? Number one, they don't have shoulder pads on. Number two, they don't have a 285-pound defensive end that's screaming around the edge who's trying to rip your head off. You have no pressure coming up the middle. There's no corner covering your receivers. You've got to be accurate, 100% accurate. if you're talking about being the number one pick. And I think over the years when Bradford's been healthy, he's shown that when he's given time, he can thread the needle, and there's nobody else out there that's better than him.
Well, you just wonder, too, you know, what would have happened if last year, if he would have entered the draft and been the first player chosen. I mean, I thought just his accuracy, how accurate he is as a quarterback, that that perhaps would have separated him from Stafford because he went first last year.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be the debate, whether or not it would have been Stafford or whether it would have been Bradford. And I was always a Bradford guy. I mean, some people talk about, well, the system he was in and this and that. And, you know, for me, I mean, if you're throwing the ball, I mean, I don't care what system that you're in. I mean, you got to be able to throw.
My final question is, because we're getting so close to wrapping this up, since we are also on topic of talking about the Big 12 Conference, some more news coming out of Kansas with Turner Gills. He's certainly changing things up there, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He has now installed a no cursing or cussing. I guess it depends on what part of the country you come from as to how you say it. Us guys in Jersey, we say cursing. And I don't think Turner's going to be recruiting Jersey too often anymore if he has a no cursing policy in place. Look, I understand what he's doing, and I understand there's a time and place. And, you know, if you can get through it and you can get guys to, you know, empty their tank emotionally, physically, and if they can do it without letting a four-letter word slide out of their mouth, then more power to them, and even a coach. But I'll tell you this, that wasn't a policy back at Nebraska when he was here, and even with Coach Osborne. You talk about the two head coach, the two main guys on those staffs were Tom Osborne, and who ran the offense, and Charlie McBride, who ran the defense. And you're talking about hot and cold, night and day. I mean, two completely different, you know, I mean, you couldn't get more opposite. And if you would have tried to install a no cursing policy with Charlie McBride, if the penalty was to pay a dime or a quarter every time you slipped, let's just say you probably only would have been receiving half of the salary at most.
But you know what, though, Jason, let me jump in here on this, and then I've got to wrap this up. But I will say this, though. I think, and maybe we'll pick this up next week, but perhaps, you know, if you're coming into, you know, some parents' homes, I mean, I think mothers, that they would have a real respect for that. And perhaps, you know, we haven't heard, I mean, I've never heard of this type of thing happening in college football. I mean, you know, will this help him work to his benefit in terms of his recruiting?
Well, I think, look, I mean, part of it, the main part of it, I do believe, is you want to turn these young kids into good men. I mean, because the percentage of them that go on to play in the NFL, it's slim and none, and it's a harsh reality. And a lot of them don't realize that you're not going to make it into the NFL, so you better become a good person. But for me, I mean, you know, there's something that happens out on the field, especially you talk about defensive guys. I mean, you're asking this wild man mentality. You're asking them to run through wall after wall after wall, and you're talking about them to put their entire heart and their everything, their mind, heart, and soul into every single play. And sometimes when things don't go well, you know, there's frustration there, and sometimes a bad word comes out.
But isn't that about discipline? You know, though, Jason, I mean, isn't it about discipline? I mean, I can remember being an athlete at OU. We absolutely could not be, you know, using that type of language on the floor. I mean, I remember busting my ankle at Texas A&M. I mean, just turned it so, and, you know, some not so nice things came out of my mouth, and I absolutely was reprimanded right on the spot. They did not give a flip that I was in pain. And it was just like, that kind of language is not going to be tolerated, period. I don't care, you know.
But, all right, Alyssa, and I'm not saying this is the main reason for success. How many national championships did you win when you were at OU?
You can't go there, JP. Come on, we were a program in transition. Okay, obviously
all
a goose
right.
egg, zero.
Can you ask me how many national championships I won when I was at Nebraska?
Okay, yes, we know. Three.
Three.
Okay,
three
yes.
National championships.
My face is beet red right now.
That we had split practices, All right, we had offense would stay outside, or defense we'd go into the indoor practice facility, and they were two different types of practices. And you know, to Charlie McBride used to tell us to play defense, it's 80% emotion, 20% technique, and that's that emotion. Not to say that you know, there aren't players that go out and perform at a high level, and I'm not saying it's a requirement that you have to curse in order to be a good player. I'm just saying that, you know, I know it's society that, you know, dictates, I think, sometimes the way that kids talk, and, you know, hanging out on the street corner and hanging out with bad people, and maybe that's what he's trying to do, is to have a tiny little impact there. But I've known plenty of my friends that, you know, from New Jersey, and when we get around the guys, like we took this last little ski trip, a bunch of us guys, and trust me, it's probably no place for a lady to be, but I can guarantee you, you put us back in our environment with our wives, with our mothers, with our parents, and you won't hear a word, a negative word out of our mouth. You won't hear a curse. I mean, you got to be a man and know the situation, and for me, the football field, I'm asking, at least when I coach, for my players to let it all hang out. And if frustration builds up and they end up cursing, for me, it was all right. It wasn't a problem, as long as they've given me maximum effort.
I can promise you, we've had Turner Gill on our show before. We will definitely be inviting him to come on after all the spring activities. And I definitely would love to get his thoughts on that. And obviously, and you had mentioned this before in our program, Jason, that they've also taken the names, the last name off the back of the jersey, too, just to kind of that team unity, that team concept. Sweet Jay, we are out of time, but we will definitely catch up with you next week. I'm telling you, my face is like beet red. I'm ready to post you up on that question you asked me. So I'll get you next week.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead on the Big E Sports Show. Stay close.